Hey everyone, thanks for joining in. Welcome to Culture Binge, where we, the Wisecrack crew, feast on the zeitgeist and lovingly regurgitate it for you. I'm your host, Alec, the managing editor here at Wisecrack. I'm here with researcher and enunciator-in-chief, Serby. Hey, Serby.
Hi, everyone.
And the saltiest of the Culture Binge hosts, but only in a physical sense, the maven of moisture. Have I used that before?
No,
Michael
like
Burns,
it.
PhD, everyone.
Yay. I'm a salty-tasting guy. It's very true.
Just a quick reminder, we have, and actually this probably changed from last episode, we have one more episode in December, and then we're doing a little bit of a season break, and we'll be back mid-January. So thank you all for listening. In the absence of bad sweat puns, you could always, I don't know, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, wherever you're listening, that lets you leave reviews. That'd be super cool. Maybe you could come up with new names for Michael Burns or Serby. She needs names too. You can find me, Jared, and Ryan on The Squanch starting next week when Rick and Morty comes back. There's a link to that in the description. But we got a lot of cool stuff to talk about today. Michael's going to talk about the OK Boomer meme. Serby's got a topic on workplace shtupping. And I'm going to be talking about TikTok censorship. But it's that time. What's good? What's bad? What slaps? What chaps? Why don't you start, Serby?
So what chaps is that I think Trader Joe's has stopped selling Toblerone chocolate.
Aww.
And I'm really gutted about it because I love going to Trader Joe's and stress eating Toblerone. But what slaps is that Costco is selling a six pack of Toblerone during the holidays.
Wow.
So that's really great news. But the problem is that it's a seasonal item. So I need to stock up for the rest of the year. I've already gone through three. Things are getting critical. But
I'm surprised it's not like a 50 pack on Costco. That's what we really need. Maybe we could start a public awareness campaign.
Yeah, that's what I really need.
All right. What about you, Mike?
Oh, okay. Here's what slaps. This thing called Couch Tour, which I only learned about recently. It involves this website called Nugs.tv, started by an illegal live music taper who turned his illegal thing into an actual business where they broadcast live concerts from a lot of different bands. And there's a good amount of artists who are on this service. So you can basically purchase to live watch really high quality live features from a band you like. And as I think I mentioned the first time I was ever on here, over the summer, I started to get into the Grateful Dead and Dead & Company, the new version of the band that John Mayer is in, and they're doing a little New York tour right now. So last week, I got to sit on the couch with some friends. We got some really nice beers and snacks and watched a really high quality, you know, two nights at Madison Square Garden, all while being lazy asses. And it's fun. And I think if you're into live music, worth checking out if there's bands that you are into that are on that, because it's the lazy man or woman or person's friend.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I really like it. What chaps is, how do I phrase this? Ooh, the increasing death of awesome media websites. About 6 weeks ago, I would wake up and, you know, do whatever I do in the morning. And normally two of the first websites I'd look at were splinter.com to look at some fun, snarky political and cultural news. And then I go to deadspin.com to look at some snarky sports and culture news. Neither of those websites exist anymore. Splinter is dead and Deadspin is functionally dead. And it's sad to see this trend of really cool media sources dying off. So that sucks. And if for some reason you're a good-hearted venture capitalist, buy something good and give them complete editorial control.
Yeah, the Deadspin thing, I don't read sports news, but I was aware of their existence. It sucks that they're essentially, I mean, they're going to still exist, but it was great
ghost.
That all the writers quit in the way that they did and really left their bosses fucked.
Awesome.
That was kind of amusing. So shout
out. What did they do?
So Deadspin, two things happened. This venture capital firm bought this website, this sports website, and cut like a deal with Farmers Insurance where they had to deliver so many impressions but couldn't meet that. So they put these really intrusive autoplay video ads on that were annoying the shit out of everyone. The writers wrote about this saying like, hey, we're sorry, like editorial has no control over these terrible ads, they should stop this. That got taken down, and like a day later Deadspin and all these sort of like former Gawker websites have like different sections. So one part was called the Concourse, where you could see the writers writing about political stuff. And then there was like other sort of more pop culture-y things on there. And some of those stories, like the only time I'd ever end up on Deadspin was stories about other stuff besides sports. And the management for seemingly inexplicable reasons were like, hey guys, stick to sports, and all the editor quit, and then like immediately or in that week, like every single writer quit, down to the last writer, where now all the articles going up there, which are not that many, are just put up by Deadspin, which is probably like some CEO trying to blog. So that's a fun story. But yeah, I used to read Gawker every morning until a guy named Peter Thiel funded a lawsuit against them by Hulk Hogan, and it shut them down. And since then, I just really haven't checked the news that often.
That's why Alex's out of touch. We always have to tell him about what happened in the past 18 months.
Well, the other one was Gothamist, which is New York News, yeah. And then they were bought by WNYC. So I read them again. Gothamist is awesome. Anyway, for me...
How about you?
Sorry, were you going to say something?
I was saying, how about you? I feel bad. You intro all of ours, and I didn't want you to have to intro yourself in this masturbatory way, so I wanted you to feel like you were set up. So, hey, what chaps and slaps for you, Alec?
I really appreciate that.
No problem.
This is a real nerdy one that I think is going to excite like five people listening. I play this game called Gloomhaven. It's like one of the top ranked tabletop games. It's like D&D in a board game, kind of. You build a character, and it's a legacy game, which means like it's not just like one game and you're over. Like you sort of like build stats that carry over the next game. It's really awesome. If you're into nerdy shit, definitely check it out. It's very expensive, but my friend bought it. So shout out to that friend for dishing out $100 to this game. What chaps? I'm gonna say I'm maybe running out of words that are related to moisture and sweat. So I'm really glad we're having this season break so I could kind of come back. The maven of moisture. Did I say that before? I don't even know.
I think that was new.
Okay. Well, we got an email. So if more people could send me things to call you, that'd be really great. Anyway, we're gonna get into our topics. We're gonna talk about OK Boomer. But before that, I have a little bit of a sponsor message. I wanna thank our sponsor, Mac Weldon, this week. Mac Weldon makes smartly designed men's basic like shirts, hoodies, underwear, and more. As someone who's often overwhelmed when shopping for clothes, I really love their simple shopping experience. You want a hoodie? They got one hoodie. You want a button-up shirt? They've got one shirt, obviously in any color you like. It's simple designs with premium fabrics. I'm doing this thing where I'm trying not to look like garbage all the time. I don't know if anyone's noticed, but I'm kind of upgrading my clothes, trying not to buy cheap garbage all the time. And I like to keep things simple. I just wear black shirts all the time and button-ups and stuff like that. And their website's kind of great for that. So I ordered a few things, and I have to say, I really love the Oxford shirt. I'm wearing it right now. It's a button up.
Looks great.
Yeah. I actually wore it to a meeting where it was important in a professional way that I did not look like human garbage. But anyway, you're going to love this, Michael. It's got anti-sweat technology, super high tech, not just wicking. Wicking, I don't know, that might be old news by now. The shirt fabric is designed to keep you extra cool and remove the sweat when it's in vapor stage instead of when it condenses into actual liquid and stains your shirt. Also, you know, if that's not enough, there's like a stitching of an underarm sweat guard. So very into that. I was running around Manhattan, aforementioned meetings, and it definitely passed the Alex sweat test. Maybe I just make fun of Michael because I'm also truly sweaty. I also got their AirKnit t-shirts, which are kind of like a great shirt for working out. They're very comfortable, very breathable. And I didn't look like a schmuck, which is great. I'm trying not to look like a schmuck. Someone just telegrammed me. It was Jacob who said I look sexy. So thank you, Jacob.
Wow, anyway, workplace compliments. That's always good. That ends well.
You can get 20% off your first order. Visit macweldon.com. I think we have that up on the screen. If you're listening to this, it's in the description. We got it everywhere. So enter promo code Wisecrack for 20% off. Again, macweldon.com, promo code Wisecrack. That's that. We can get into boomers.
Well, can I say before we get into boomers, this is for any listener, I have nothing to do with advertising parts of this, but Mack Weldon's the underwear I wear because they're the only ones that keep my midsection cool when it's steamy outside. So I have a whole drawer full of them, and they have one of their like really thin knit boxer briefs or whatever. Oh my God, they were life changers. I remember the first day I put a pair of those on, went out on a hot day, and there was a coolness in my special parts that has really been a game changer. So
I also have one that's laced with silver, so it's antimicrobial. Silver like naturally kills germs.
Well, since you brought it up, my butt smells bad and I fart too much, so my partner brought that up and we got me silver boxer shorts from then. So I have a lot of problems. listeners and viewers. And
I'm
Mac
really
Weldon's
your
helped me solve
so. Right now, so thank you, Mike.
That's my new thing. In 2020, I'm going to be real boxed in, but for the rest of 2019, I'm an open book and butt.
Serby's a germaphobe, so I really want to know what's going through her head. But anyway.
Well, actually, before we even started, I was going to compliment you on your shirt, that I really liked the color and the cut of it. It's very flattering.
Yeah, you look hot, man.
Let's talk about boomers. There's a meme going around, and it's just okay boomers. Maybe there's comma in it. Maybe there's not. What's going on?
Oh, well, no one is more qualified to talk about this than an old millennial like myself. I am officially a millennial, in case anyone's wondering, but a senior one. Something that popped off on the internet over the past couple weeks, it's gotten attention from olds and others, is this meme, okay, boomer. And some of the early instances or uses of this meme are sort of like audio clips or images of boomers and old people basically like accusing Gen Z of having Peter Pan syndrome and not growing up and not taking their responsibilities seriously enough and sort of like desiring too much for their futures. And the boomer response is like, you know, I paid for my own college and did all this and worked hard, stop whining. And because Gen Z is rad, and I truly think this, like I think that the younger generation is very rad for a number of reasons we can maybe get into, their response has been a casual two-word, okay, boomer, to sort of undercut the kind of cultural criticism coming at them from the generation that they might see as making their world terrible or creating the conditions that have meant their lives are bad. And there was a New York Times piece about it that interviewed a bunch of the people that have both perpetuated this meme and made merch around this meme. One person made $10,000 off hoodies in the first day they went up. But a bunch of the young people they interviewed had really smart takes, and they were like, we're the generation that has the most downward mobility since like World War II. So yes, we're pissed off and we're annoyed that the generation that had some of the biggest cultural and economic advantages are giving us shit. Go ahead, Alec.
The amazing thing is, I was like, oh wow, that kid made $10,000. And there's like maybe a tinge of jealousy, but then when asked what they were doing in this New York Times article, they're like, oh, it's going to go to my college,
yep,
which is like, that's one fifth of 1 year, maybe.
Yeah. And that's the most Gen Z thing ever, right? Like you start to read that article and you're maybe millennial or Gen X or boomer brain is like, oh, they're just making money off this because blah, blah, blah. But you're like, no, they need money. Paying for college. Don't judge them. Okay. What did the boomers do? They sold, I don't know, jazz cigarettes to help pay their $50 a semester college fees or something.
Sorry, what are jazz cigarettes?
Oh, old-timey talk for marijuana joints. And I'm pretty sure there's like a super racist connotation in why they were called jazz cigarettes as well. But it's a thing that like they used to say. Real thing, didn't make that up. So yeah, and I think when we could talk about all sides of this, the interesting thing that happened with OK Boomer is that millennials murdered it in like 48 hours, just ripped it apart and killed it. And I want to read a tweet, and I'll like retweet this so anyone who follows me on Twitter, you can see this, or follow me if you don't. It's great content every day. That's not true. But a writer, I'm going to say her last name wrong, and Alec, you might know this. Rachel Syme, S-Y-M-E. She's a New York-based writer. She's written a lot of features for like the New Yorker, New York Times, a writer who I like a lot, but I don't know how to say her name. If for any reason she listens to this podcast, probably doesn't think she should, I'm really sorry. But she tweeted this a couple days ago. She said, the reason OK Boomer is such a great generational marker is it cleaves so neatly. Boomers hate it. Gen X will mock it. Millennials will enthusiastically use it to the point of exhausting it without actually inventing it. And Gen Z has already moved on and thinks we are all noobs. And then she followed up by saying, everyone I know who loves to say it is like 33, which is kind of what happened. And one of the things that led to this was right as OK Boomer was coming into cultural consciousness, former President Barack Obama scolded people for getting mad on the internet at some event the other day. And the response from millennials was like, to OK Boomer, former President Barack Obama, which just felt corny on all sides. And the memes that were made by millennials kind of killed it. And I think there's two very interesting things here. And I'll say this and I'll stop talking. on the one end, I think it's a great example of how awesome Gen Z is. We can talk about this more, but I truly think they're great in a lot of ways. I think there's certain things you see them doing in both like art and media and social movements that are things that people didn't do when I was a teen and in my early 20s. So they're rad. The lamest thing I think is that millennials are so like self-hating that sometimes all we want to do is appropriate like younger culture and we're not aware that we're just murdering it. So I think my takeaway from all this for millennials is like, just appreciate things. Like it doesn't have to be about you. You can appreciate okay boomer without having to be like, oh, they ran out of quinoa at my salad shop. Okay boomer. Doesn't matter. Just appreciate that someone else said that. What do y'all think about okay boomer?
So this is the first time I've ever heard of this term. So I feel very much out of the loop on this. I don't know that I don't feel like I appropriate like younger culture. I think I do it ironically when I talk to my younger cousins and I message them things like, what's Gucci fam? And like say things like, what's lit? Like that's lit. And like if somebody's like, oh, I got like, I'm going to go to Paris in the summer. I'll be like, that's a weird flex, but okay. Mm. So like I try to like do that, but it's all very like, they just think I'm ridiculous because I don't speak like that. So I don't know that I do that. I don't know that my friends do that, but it's interesting that this is like a cultural thing going on. I don't really know. Like, okay, boomer, it's kind of funny, but I also think it's unkind because I think Alec, you said it or somebody said it, it undercuts people. And
I meant that in really a positive way.
Oh, you meant it in a positive way.
I think
way.
It's cool that they undercut people with it, but I'm a monster.
I sort of feel like when we say things like that, it trivializes other people and it diminishes their experience. And I don't know that I'm okay with that so much.
Yeah, I think I got sick of this meme this morning when I was reading about it, but I was really into it for the past 2 days. I probably helped kill it. Well, I didn't make an okay boomer joke, but I was like going in my head of like, what philosophy book can I Photoshop out the title and write okay boomer, get retweets. I didn't come to a conclusion. However, I'm a little torn because first of all, I like the spirit of boomer as like a mindset. This is kind of in the Taylor Renz New York Times article. It's like kind of like anyone can exhibit boomer mentality. So like to me, especially on the internet, like someone is a boomer in a specific moment when they're like complaining about millennials killing TGI Fridays or something like that. In which case I'm like, okay, boomer. That being said, like I don't want to like bracket all people from a certain age range there because there are some boomers who have done some pretty dope stuff, who've made some pretty dope music. Is dope me appropriating cool kid language? I don't know. But
we'll allow it.
So there's that. And also I read there's this op-ed in The Guardian that was kind of complaining that like one of my complaints about boomers is like my parents had like a sweet deal. My dad graduated college, was like by the time he was my age, he was already divorced twice. Divorced once, married twice, had two kids, had a job with a single income, was able to buy a house and all this stuff. And there was a moment where he was like, oh, you goddamn millennials. And me and my brother just made fun of him so much in person that I think he gave that up and was like, oh, I get it. Like, we ruined the economy. Everything's fucked. And now he doesn't do that anymore, which I think is something you do in person with somebody, but doesn't necessarily work on the internet where people just get like automatically very defensive. On the other thing, this op-ed in the Guardian was talking about how for circumstances that they may or may not have created, but like retiring boomers now are like fucked. Like a huge percentage of them have like less than $25,000 in savings. They won't be able to live off of Social Security, just like all of these terrible economic conditions. And then it gets a little trickier because it's like, you know, are boomers the victims of themselves? Or are they a victim of a subset of boomers, or like, you know, the like vulture capitalist who gutted all these things and left us with a terrible future? And so that was this writer's argument, which I'm certainly sympathetic to. And so like I do think it's funny when boomers, the same boomers who complain about millennials and Gen Z being snowflakes, are like, how dare you say that that's ageist? Although I don't like, I think some people are using it like it's just a way to say old people, which like I'm not, because, you know, old people get screwed over. We shouldn't use it that way. We should just use it as like a collective group of people who did a thing. It has nothing to do with their age. It just has to do with like the moment that they grew up in. In the same way, we can say like Americans did X, Y, or Z, and obviously not all Americans did those things, but like as a country, we voted for that person or went to war with that country or passed this legislation, you know?
Yeah, well, and this is why the grammar is important as well, because the main meme isn't okay, boomers. It's not saying like screw a whole age bracket of people. It's used to say okay, boomer, normally at a specific boomer that's exemplifying the toxic ideology of boomerism. Because there was an LA Times article, and I forgot the name of the writer. It's an op-ed. I think it came out yesterday or the day before. But it brought up like, you know, there's people that are super old that by the logic of Gen Z are doing cool stuff, like Jane Fonda getting arrested every day with her friends. Like, that's not boomer behavior. That's like something that's cool. And she's, I think Jane Fonda's in her late 70s, early 80s. So I think it's not as much tied to age as to people embodying a certain form of cultural logic, which tends to like place blame or speak down to people in Gen Z.
How would you define that logic? I think that's kind of an interesting question because I have my own, but I won't.
I think part of it is like a logic of I didn't think about this before, so if this is trash, I'm sorry, listeners. But part of it is like a logic of self-sufficiency. A lot of it comes down to like, we did X on our own. Why can't you do that? And then I think a lot of it is, one writer used the term Peter Pan syndrome, Gen Z wanting a lot in life and kind of having a more idealistic bordering on utopian vision of what they want the world or art or culture or whatever to look like. And then them being told they're not allowed to think like that. Almost like that they're not allowed to dream big or dream seriously. In the same way, like, you know, Gen Z will say, this is shit. We come out of college with a ton of debt. We can't afford to then get a house because the job market sucks. And then their parents or grandparents tell them the narrative about how they graduated without debt, got a job, were married at 26, and were paying off their mortgage. Who are you to complain? So I know those are like the functions of that critique that seem to be the ones that they're responding to.
You're shaking your head a lot, Serby.
So I think I misunderstood the original intent of this like phrase, okay, boomer. So for me, I thought it was like a way to like be unkind to boomers, but I understand that it's like a way to like
respond.
Yeah.
Yeah, they didn't start it.
It's just something that makes me so angry because I hear a lot about this in my family where people will be like, oh, these millennials, they come in and after a year they want a new job or they want a raise or like all this stuff. And it's like, well, why not? We see how fucked over you got by not asking for a raise, by not like committing to career development and growth. Like, should we do the same thing? And we grew up in an economy where we didn't have as many opportunities, where we weren't able to have like a single income and get a job. And when people say things about Peter Pan syndrome, well, a lot of people live at home because they can't afford anything else. So that makes me mad too when people say like, when I was your age, I was married and had kids. Well, when you were my age, you also probably didn't have $150,000 in debt, unable to afford a house. So that makes me really mad. And I don't like that. I think it's like it's a lack of understanding and empathy on the part of an older generation that doesn't understand what younger generations go through. So I think millennials are caught in this phase where it's like we constantly have to defend ourselves and fight for things. And the generation after us sees what we're going through. And they're just, I feel like some of my younger cousins are jaded by it. They're like, oh, like our parents are like weird. And then our older cousins they're just seem bitter and angry. And part of me is bitter and angry.
So the boomers for a time labeled by, I guess, the greatest generation. I don't know the technical generation name. They were called the me generation because they're a bunch of narcissists. Like they're the generation that was like, great, like let's get really into Wall Street and cocaine, and like, you know, gild everything in gold. Now they're kind of projecting that on us because we want like health insurance. And also, like, to me, the boomer mindset, it's a lot of like their lives are pretty cool, you know, economic opportunities, housing, all this stuff. For a time, the medical system was not as screwed up as it is, or was at least partially better. And so I think they just universalize as kind of like in a narcissistic way that like, oh yeah, well, like this is the way I did it. And like, I work so hard because I'm so special. Like, why are these kids? And I'll just, an anonymous boomer that I know, I won't name names, but their plan when they retire, and I think this is just a beautiful encapsulation of this, they want to kind of keep working to keep themselves busy. And they're, they want to just go into a radio station and just volunteer to like read the news, the morning news. And so in their mind, they could just like walk into a radio station and be like, hello, I'd like a job, please. Can I do your most important job like once a day for free? And I think it just speaks to like, that was probably their experience after graduating to college is like, I have a degree. I'd like a job, please. Yes. Thank you very much. And then I think that all kind of like trickles down into how they view the supposedly like entitled millennials. But yeah.
Yeah. And I think like going off that example, just real quick, I even think about like my dad who was a boomer. He had that whole shit where like he ended up in a good career, but it was like, well, my uncle got me a job in the mailroom at the company. And then I slowly worked my way up. And it was like a real thing where getting the lowest paid job in like a company, he ended up getting a really high paying job later in life. And like, that's not a thing. But it used to truly be a thing for people.
Now, if for entry-level jobs, you still need 2 years of experience.
Yeah, I got $80,000 in debt to get an unpaid internship to do for 2 years before I'd have enough experience to have a job that pays me $30,000 a year.
Oh, I don't like anything at all.
Well, on that downer, I think we should move on. Serby, you want to talk about bosses developing relationships with people.
Oh, this is
possibly at McDonald's.
Exciting topic.
So over the weekend, McDonald's chief executive Steve Easterbrook was fired for having a consensual relationship with a McDonald's employee. The board determined that Easterbrook had engaged in a relationship that violated company policy, which prohibits employees from having a direct or indirect reporting relationship, from dating or having a sexual relationship. So in Easterbrook's case, because he was the chief executive, that means anyone who works at McDonald's. Employment lawyers have stated that his firing signals changing attitudes about romance in the workplace. So this topic can become quickly heated, and I don't want to focus on whether McDonald's was correct in firing its CEO, but what I do want to chat about is how you feel about workplace romances in general and whether or not they should be prohibited.
Well, I thought about this a little bit. When I was in college, dated a coworker, was not their boss. And we've been together for 8 years, coming in a few days.
Well, that story had a fun ending.
So in my mind, like there are, like, I kind of support the idea that they're a bad idea, that obviously corporations need to like discourage them at like a high cost. At the same time, like, I'm not sitting around being like, you dated a coworker, you must be a monster. Although, cause I think what happens is for every time that, like, let's say the CEO legitimately falls in love with, you know, someone who works there and there's not like weird coercion and it's just really a beautiful relationship. Maybe, I don't know that relationship. There's probably 10 cases of like bosses being creepers and using their position of power to get someone to go on a date with them or something like that. So like, I don't want to point fingers at the McDonald's person because I don't know the scenario, but I get like on a policy level why that's true. And I think it's always been that. And also, not to mention, most relationships end in people breaking up. And that's got to be super awkward for all kinds of other reasons.
Yeah, I mean, I think the point you made about the for every one, you know, well-intentioned workplace relationship, there's 10 or more that are shady and abuses of power, I think is the important thing. And I always think about, I spent, you know, about a decade in academia at various levels as like a grad student, a part-time worker, and a full-time worker. And man, I saw some shady shit over the years of people taking advantage of their power and influence as an academic, almost exclusively males. I only ever knew one woman professor who did some shady shit, although it was pretty, well, that's a story for when we're off air, but, or just, you know, DM me, I'll tell it to you. I don't care. I'm sloppy. But, you know, I saw a lot of this and it's not good. And like the effects of, normally it tends to be a man in power, having feelings for a woman who tends to be younger and in a lower ranking position, it creates a lot of tensions and creates, you brought up the breakup thing, creates a really shitty situation for the person who's lower down in the power dynamics, whether that's a man or woman or whoever, because you're in this really awkward scenario where someone that you've been romantically entangled with and vulnerable with now has power over the means of your like existence and your you know, ability to pay rent and stuff. And my devil's advocate would be, I don't know, we work more than ever. Some people are at their job 60, 80 hours a week. Where else do you meet people? So like I have sympathy for the fact that some people are so enmeshed in that world that like you do it. And like, I don't know, I have a friend, we'll call him not Michael, who works at a creative startup. And when it's like a small place and people hang out all the time, you see people having flirtations or romantic stuff, but it's almost like, I get it. You people are a bunch of young people around the same age. You're together all the time. That's bound to happen. To me, it seems like we might need new ways of thinking about the morality and ethics of this and sort of formal things. Like, do we know, for example, what the McDonald's code of conduct was that was broken exactly?
No, no information has been provided.
There's almost certainly a policy against having relationships with like a subordinate.
Yeah.
Well, that was the one that I read. You can't have a direct or indirect reporting relationship.
Right.
But I don't know. What if one of y'all met someone at work who happened to be your subordinate and you truly, truly had like a special connection with them? Would you avoid that? Would you?
So I think like for me, like I've thought about this a lot because I've been involved with a few, like in previous positions, I've been involved with people I've worked with, but none of them have been like my direct superior, my direct manager or anybody within my line of management. But I think like peer-to-peer relationships are fine. Like, I don't think that you need to disclose those sorts of things. But if it is somebody within like tangentially related, like in your department or something who's in a senior leadership role, I do think that that should be disclosed. Not to ask for permission, but maybe to just say like, this is what's going on. So if we are working on a project together, if this person is involved in like my review cycle or something like that, you should be aware of it to remove any conflict of interest. But if it's somebody like the CEO or COO or somebody like that who has like strong, who has a strong influencing power over your career, I don't think that they should be allowed to have relationships with subordinates.
Yeah, even the way it starts is so, like, let's just say wholesomely, a boss is like, want to go on a date? That person is probably going to be like, will I maybe get a promotion if I, will I not get promoted if I, you know, like, and as soon as that happens, and this happens in academia all the time, there was, it wasn't even a romantic relationship, but there was this big shit show of this philosopher named Avital Ronell. Are you familiar with this?
Oh boy, yes.
Yeah, she, I don't know if she, one of her grad students, who's a gay man, and I think she, is she straight or is she lesbian? Anyway, there was like a lot of like sexual joking where they would like jokingly cuddle. But after a while, he's like, I don't want to jokingly cuddle you anymore. And then launch this whole big like sexual harassment thing. But yeah, it's just all of those sort of like disconnects where it's probably a horrible idea. Although, again, I'm going to throw myself under the bus. Before I dated my coworker, so I was an RA. We were both RAs. I was not her boss. I dated a resident. And I like to say I was pretty impartial. And also, she is the one who asked me out, not vice versa. But I would write her friends up and I didn't give a shit. So I would also write up my friends up because I was like, listen, if you can't put a towel under the door, you deserve to get written up for smoking weed.
What a snitch.
I was just asking him to lie, saw the door. Like, come on.
But I mean, I think there's like a tie-in. There's like a tie-in from the last topic to this, of course, because like, what did boomer culture establish as appropriate workplace relationships? Like, sketchy shit. Like, I'm the product of a sketchy workplace relationship.
Oh.
Yes, viewers and listeners, that makes you now think I'm trash and you should never listen to me and I shouldn't exist. But I'm here.
That's because, catastrophic thinking.
Yeah, but my, oh shit, you're right. Backing away from it. No, but my, I mean, I don't know. One of these people isn't alive. One of them would never listen to this or watch this because she's bad at the computer. But my parents met in a setting where my mom was like a secretary in an office. And my dad was someone that like worked in this office, not directly with her. And they got like shit-faced on St. Patrick's Day and hooked up. So this is too real. I'm getting way vulnerable. In 2020, I'm not saying anything. But like that was just like normal. And they would tell that story about how they met. Like, that's like a normal thing. Whereas in 2019, that would seem just wild, or at least would seem inappropriate. So I think there's an established workplace culture and people from that generation are still at the top of the corporate ladder and haven't caught up to how suspect a lot of this behavior is.
Can I just say I love that it was also on your hallowed Irish holiday of St. Patrick's Day?
It makes it a little bit better, yeah. It was on a school bus bar crawl in the south side of Chicago.
Wow.
Just dirtbaggery all around. This makes sense to anyone of why, yeah, why I'm a sweaty piece of garbage. But yeah.
Anything else to add, Serby?
I will say that if you engage in a workplace relationship, be very careful. If you break up, things can get very awkward.
Oh, yeah.
Why do you think? Never mind.
I did not break up during that tenure. And yeah. Anyway, I've got a topic today. It's about TikTok. So TikTok, you know, it's an app. The kids are on, the Zoomers, if you will. They make memes about OK Boomers, etc. It's owned by a Chinese company called ByteDance. And there was an article, and I believe that's in the description, on Politico, talking, kind of rounding up the kind of evidence about them censoring stuff. So Chinese censorship has become an issue when the NBA, which has a very large presence in China, one of the general managers tweets a pro-Hong Kong tweet. The NBA freaks out. The Chinese government's not happy. All that stuff. In this context, so I'll just read from the article. So according to documents obtained by The Guardian, TikTok censored numerous subjects that extend beyond the obvious topics seem dangerous to the Chinese state. According to The Guardian's reporting on the directives in the documents, TikTok suppressed videos about, quote, a specific list of 20 foreign leaders or sensitive figures, including Kim Jong-il, Kim Il-sung, Mahatma Gandhi, Vladimir Putin, Donald Trump, Barack Obama, Kim Jong-un, and Shinzo Abe. End quote. Think of how much social media vitriol is generated by figures on that list, and it's easy to understand why a fun app would want to blacklist those politically divisive figures. Then it goes on. After these documents were revealed, the company issued a statement denying it continues its previous policies. Quote, let us be very clear, the company said. TikTok does not remove content based on sensitivities related to China. We have never been asked by the Chinese government to remove any content, and we would not do so if asked, period. Our U.S. moderation team, which is led out of California, reviews content for adherence to our U.S. policies, just like other U.S. companies in our space. We're not influenced by any foreign government, including the Chinese government. Still, people aren't buying it. So one of the things they might do is it's called shadow banning, where if you make kind of like a political TikTok, it'll be on your page. Maybe your friends can see it, but would not get distributed widely. And also this, it applies to not just stuff about, you know, Chinese figures or stuff related to Chinese politics, but kind of all political content, which someone told me they kind of liked, because TikTok is a place to unwind, not a place to get stressed out about politics. But, you know, obviously that can get very sketchy very quickly. Yeah, what do you guys think?
I'm interested in knowing more about who TikTok's investors are and where they get their money and whether they have any foreign investment from China.
Mm-hmm.
Because they could have like, oh, we're not influenced, but at the same time, our VC is from China.
Wait, isn't it a Chinese company?
Yeah, it's a Chinese company.
Okay, but, yeah.
Oh, sorry. It is.
Yeah.
But maybe they have international investors? I don't know. Yeah.
Well, there you go. I don't know. Like when I hear about things like censorship and stuff like this, I'm never surprised. And I'm always surprised when other people are surprised because I'm like, what do you mean? How are you surprised right now?
Yeah. To tie back to my chap thing from earlier, like, I don't know. It's on a much smaller example. Clearly, the websites I mentioned before, Splinter and Deadspin, got shut down because the investors in those things didn't like the political and cultural overtones of what they were saying. It seems clear in this case as well. And I don't know. I can't not be bummed about any type of censorship, even if, and I think you said that a friend mentioned this, Alec. I totally get that you might just want to watch fun videos on TikTok of like teens doing the meme where they like do things from history class to rap music. God, I feel old. And not have like politics coming at you. But every form of media, I'm going to make a blanket statement, has always been able to be used for political subversion and activism and exploration. And I think it's a weird precedent as we move towards, you know, the world of 2020. To be censoring any sort of political speech on a social media platform. It just feels icky.
The thing that I'm kind of, I don't really have any answers, but I've been thinking about it. So this is bad, obviously. State censorship, especially bad. I guess in the back of my head, I'm just curious if like China's being scapegoated in kind of like a weird way. And they're not apples to apples, but as you mentioned, like, you know, sites like Deadspin are being censored by their hedge fund managers. Like this happens in a lot of news. There's been a mm-hmm. lot of literature written about how advertiser interests often effectively create censorship on cable news, which is icky. State censorship feels ickier, but like, I don't know, like I'm open to sort of interrogate that. And the other thing is like America's been exporting their culture You know, since at least World War II, if not earlier, wherever you are, you're probably consuming U.S. American music, American movies, sometimes American news. We had the Voice of America, which was essentially like a propaganda arm setting up radio stations to tell people about how great democracy was. And, you know, so we're kind of dealing with the other end of the stick now, where it's not culture, but it's like another country's technology is coming in, sort of shaping the public debate. And granted, it still feels ickier because when it's like U.S. music being exported, it's like, well, you know, those are private individuals, private companies, whatever. It's not, you know, Ronald Reagan or Bill Clinton saying what gets to make it on there, unless it's Voice of America. I don't really know the oversight structure. But yeah, I mean, the technology thing, the way that a foreign government can, like, you know, TikTok got fined a ton of money for violating like privacy rights for children under U.S. law. Mm. It feels icky, but I also want to be aware of the way that, like, sometimes we happen to put extra special attention on a country that happens to have geopolitical tensions with America and put a standard, like, put them under a microscope that they would not otherwise be under. And I don't think that means that we should say China's great, nothing bad's happening there, or that we shouldn't talk about these things. Mm-hmm. But I'm just saying it gets tricky.
No, I think you're totally right that the kind of easy response here is to do some weird blame China thing, which I think is, yeah, naive and short-sighted to act like it's a uniquely geopolitical problem that only applies to Chinese business interests, and that America is this wonderful place that would never do anything to squanch free speech. So yeah, that's a good point.
Did you say squanch free speech?
I did. I was looking for another word, and then I think I was just like, you know what? Let's do some brand synergy product tie-in, because now listeners, the word squanch is in their head. And then later, they're going to want to listen to the squanch.
Serby, anything else to add? We can keep this a short one.
Yeah, I don't have too much to add to this.
Okay. All right, let's get into the voicemails. We got some voicemails. We got some emails. If you want to leave us a voicemail, the number is 1-213-534-8807. That's 1-213-534-8807. And email us at culturebinge@wisecrack.co. What's the first voicemail we got?
Oh, we just got one. It's from Roberto, and we're going to listen to it. And then we have some paper emails. Alec looks concerned. Did I do something wrong?
I thought we had two voicemails. It's okay.
I'll make one up if you want. But let's start with the real one before I make one up.
Hey, Wisecrack. My name's Roberto. I'm calling on behalf of Culture Binge, episode 19, where Serby talked about talking to children about opiate addiction and Sesame Street. Coming from a sociologist's point of view, we have a lot of knowledge that children internalize these ideas about addiction and the toxic effects that it can have. For example, we have this book written by a sociologist called Matthew Desmond called Evicted that talks about the eviction cycle and how that creates an effect on children, particularly in the developmental stages. We also know that, you know, children develop mental disorders or mental illnesses because of the cycle of poverty and eviction. And bringing that to Sesame Street, I think that Sesame Street providing a safe and consumable language where children can learn to interpret these sorts of things can try to at least provide the first effects of mitigating the effects that opioid addiction might have on the lives of these children. So just wanted to get y'all's thoughts. Appreciate it. Love your show. Bye.
That was that.
I think that makes sense. Like, if children have like a baseline foundation to understand what's going on, this way they're not like, I think children, when they don't understand things, they can become afraid and feel insecure, and that can lead to more issues. So if Sesame Street can provide a foundation on which children can understand and they're not afraid at first, and then that could help parents and other caregivers have more extensive conversations, I think that's great. I didn't think about that.
Yeah.
I think Joy may have loaded another voicemail onto your little device.
Maybe it was me. Maybe it was the best producer in the game, Joy. I don't know. Let's not assign blame and praise. Somehow we have another email or voicemail. It's from Ricky. Joy's also the best. Here we go.
Hey, this is Ricky. And I was listening to the Culture Binge episode, specifically on the new feature on Netflix that's going to come to mobile, where you can speed up and slow down the playback speed of your shows and your films. I'm actually excited for this, and I'm actually not excited for the speed-up part. I'm actually excited for the slowdown part. And that's because I'm a film student myself, particularly an animation student, and something that I like to do to further my study within animation is to slow down some footage to see it better frame by frame. Now, I know that I can buy digital copies of these films to, like, or maybe even, like, illegally download it to, like, you know, go frame by frame in my own, like, media player application, wherever that may be. But sometimes having the mobile option and just going through, like, quick research on my phone, on my iPad, I think it gives me more options to, like, have more films that might be either harder to acquire or that I just don't want to go through the trouble of, like, paying for everything, for if, especially if, like, paying for individual things, if, like, Netflix can provide me that.
Cool. That's a good point. I didn't think am I wrong in thinking we only discussed the speed up function?
Somebody might have mentioned, and maybe it was an email, so I think either Serby said it or it was an email. We might have mentioned people learning English or any language, like slowing it down so you understand it, which I need the shit out of for Spanish because they talk very fast. I mean, they don't really talk too fast. It's just that bad understanding.
Fair enough. No, but that was a cool point, though, because we were talking about, you know, like Judd Apatow and others who were like, we're filmmakers and speeding it up will ruin our art. But Ricky's point there is like, for people that really appreciate film or are studying things like animation, slowing down does the opposite. It allows them to appreciate the art and learn more. So that's a really cool perspective on that.
Mm-hmm. I had one when I was listening to his voicemail, one other realization, which is that a lot of times the moments between lines will be facial expressions and stuff like that. And if you're someone like who doesn't get facial expressions that well because you're on the spectrum, you don't give two shits. And like, of course you want to 2x that. So also, fuck Judd Apatow for hating autistic people.
Wow, you heard it here, folks. Judd Apatow hates autistic people, sourced by Alec. Spread the news.
I really wish him no ill will. I'm sorry. So with that being said, that was a cool email, voicemail, though.
That was
Thank
really
you
cool.
so much. What do we got on the emails?
Oh, boy, oh, boy. First, it's from Danny. It says, hi, y'all. Michael asked a couple weeks ago for anyone with kids who aren't dicks how they taught them compassion. When last week's episode came out and no one had responded, figured I probably should. I'm a single dad for 10 years with primary custody of my 12-year-old son. He's a very kind and considerate kid. I could tell you about how I've always been open and honest whenever he's had questions, how the daycare center that he spent every weekday in from 3 until 6 was very ethnically diverse, or how I'm open about my own failings and vulnerabilities with him. But that might be beside the point. I asked him yesterday how he got to be so kind and understanding of other kids. He told me it wasn't anything that I taught him specifically. He said he got that from seeing the way how I interact with other people. Well, I think there are a lot of ways to teach your kids empathy. I think it'll be difficult to make it stick if you aren't a caring person yourself. Kids are so freaking absorbent of the behavior of the people they look up to. If we want more compassion to children, then we need to lead by example. Thanks, guys. I appreciate every bit of content y'all are putting out on the internet and something, something, Serby mukbang from Danny. That I almost teared up reading that. I'm not like kidding. Sometimes when I say earnest stuff, I sound sarcastic. That's like really sweet that his kid straight up said to him, like, Dad, the reason I'm good is because of you.
Yeah, I really like this email. I read it as I was like winding down, like relaxing before bed. And I felt very emotional, too, about it. It was so kind. And it's so true. Children are like sponges. And so if we set a good example, they'll follow it.
It makes me worried because if I ever have kids, I veer towards sarcastic. And so maybe that's not the greatest, you know, attribute for a child to learn.
So donate now. Anyone listening, hashtag Alec vasectomy. And we'll make sure this never happens. All funds will go directly to a doctor I saw on a billboard outside of Houston that said he's done 15 million vasectomies.
I feel like that's true.
No, it's definitely true. Someone who's listening to this will know the billboard I'm talking about. They're all over the Southeast and they update the number and it's some creepy looking guy and it's like Dr. Whatever has done X million vasectomies. And he's like, and it's like, well, man, you've cut a lot of wiener tubes. So the next email, does anyone have any other thoughts on Danny's email?
No, it was awesome.
Yeah, and Danny sounds like a rad dad. So if you need father advice, find Danny. Next one's from Ricardo. Hi, Wisecrack crew. I'm Ricardo from Brazil. And even though I'm a pretty consistent listener, I couldn't think of a better instance of the show to mail on than this one. Since I've always wanted to send my DNA for a private company in exchange for information I could gather from communicating with my family, I absolutely love daylight savings time because of the existing school, college work, and seeing the sun thing. And every single YouTube video I watch is locked at 2x speed, so much so that I find it really odd whenever watching stuff like music or movie trailers properly. Wow, we were on brand for him. To be better suited to one topic, I'll comment more on the Netflix and content speed option by saying that I'm very much positive to it. I find it really annoying whenever watching some series and the characters take like 2 seconds between every line. That's how he wrote it out. That wasn't me interpreting. And although there's an argument to be made in favor of the writer's intent with the timing of everything, I'd be much more interested in just speeding up some boring parts than to be fiddling with the double tap to skip 10 seconds and end up having to manually find the start of a line and wasting more time than I'd waste by just watching the thing. Also, I would like to thank you for the gruesome image of me being the most efficient YouTube moneymaker after the comment about companies wanting the speeding up of content, therefore speeding up the delivery of ads, since I'm one of the few people I know who doesn't run an ad blocker on the site. Once again, I appreciate what you guys do. Greetings from Brazil, and keep up the good work.
Yeah.
That guy's awesome.
That was a great email. I don't have a ton else to add other than thank you.
Should we call that a hat trick episode? If we had three topics that were all of direct interest to Ricardo, we call it like some sort of a hat trick or something else. Maybe someone could suggest a better name.
A Ricardo trick.
Oh, a Ricardo.
A Rick trick?
A Rick trick.
Rick trick. Loving that. So I finally got a hold of somebody's Netflix login, so I've been able to watch that. Very excited. Shout out to my aunt. I have been watching some other stuff too, including The Handmaid's Tale, which is good, but very slow. So slow it moves backwards. So I've been skipping through a lot of stuff. And I did think about this and wished very intensely that I had like a 1.5 or 2x speed option.
I think I want to rewatch Dragon Ball Z on 10x speed because that's how little happens in that show, but I need to know what happens. Because I went away to summer camp in the middle of the Frieza saga, and I came back and they started again with like one of the earlier episodes. I wasn't going to wait around for that, so now I just don't know what happens.
And I'm going to take acid and watch Stranger Things on 20x speed and see if I survive. Not real.
Someone in the comments is asking about the email again. Just a reminder, it's culturebinge@wisecrack.co. Send us an email.
Also, true story, once some people I knew in England were like, hey, do you want to come over? We're going to take acid and watch Stranger Things. And I was like, what a terrible idea. You're going to be on acid in a show where there's monsters in the walls.
Those people are dumb.
No, they're idiots. And you know what? There's a small chance some of them are listening to this. This is true. And if you're listening, you're an idiot.
Can we fundraise their vasectomies?
Yeah, no, you know, in England, they're free. Austin Smith, who's a host of various Wisecrack properties, once he and I, when we both lived in Scotland, got a little drunk and made this deal that we were going to go get free vasectomies from the national healthcare system. And we were like in our mid-20s. Didn't do it. We got another email. Should we get into it?
Yeah.
This is from Anonymous. I think it's from The Anonymous, right? Like the hacking organization?
Okay. They sent their name. We're just keeping it out.
Okay. An email from an anonymous person. Hi. Big fan of all Wisecrack content. Please keep up the awesome work. I'm an attorney, and I wanted to write in on your conversation regarding DNA testing kits. This is not an area of the law I'm familiar with, and your discussion encouraged me to look into the legal protection surrounding our DNA. And I was surprised in how unregulated the industry is. For example, HIPAA protects health information, including identifiable genetic information, by limiting its use and disclosure. However, DNA services like Ancestry.com are not considered healthcare providers or business associates of healthcare providers, and are thus not required to follow HIPAA guidelines. This is just one example, and U.S. federal law has simply not caught up to this issue, although some states are moving to provide protection for DNA. Probably better to keep your DNA away from these services. Also, Serbi asked for travel recommendations for Vienna. I would like to recommend the, I'm not going to be able to say this word, Kunsthistorisch, oh boy. Why did I have to read this? A German word, Kunsthistorisches Museum, which has a spectacular collection of art, antiquities, and sculpture, but lacked the crowds at other museums like the Louvre. It is one of the best museums I have seen and was a highlight of my trip to Vienna. Thanks, Anonymous, and sorry for the pronunciation.
I think it's Kunsthistorisches, but I think it means culture history museum. I only took one semester of German. I probably fucked that up. So sorry, Yeah. So HIPAA, the word, it's the Privacy Act for healthcare. It stands for, I think, health. I'm gonna fuck this up because nobody knows what it actually stands for. Healthcare Information Portability and Protection Accountability Act or something like that. I only know that because I had to get HIPAA certified, and that was one of the questions, and I've since forgotten. It was many years ago.
I really like this email. Somehow I missed it in my inbox, so I'm super excited to read it, and thank you for the Vienna recommendation. I'm so excited about my trip.
Yeah, that's like really cool that he or she hit us up about this, and I think it's also very terrifying in some like slightly Black Mirror-esque way that there's legal loopholes that mean that companies like that don't have to follow ethical standards in terms of what they do with our DNA information. And that truly freaks me out a little bit.
Yeah. And whenever you go to any doctor, psychiatrist, whatever, in a medical setting, if you get a DNA test, genetic testing, if you get a vasectomy, all that is like highly, highly regulated in the ways that they can use it. You sign a waiver probably and everything that you never read. None of that applies to when you go on like, you know, DNAandme.com or something like that. And they can sell it how they want. They can use it how they want. If it leaks and gets out there, that's kind of like fair game. So yeah, it's a shit show. Cool. Well, with that being said, we will see you all in December, I believe. So thank you all so much for listening. Don't forget Mack Weldon, check their stuff out. Promo code Wisecrack. Keeping Burns' nether regions nice and cool, probably at the second.
I truly have them on right now, and I feel fantastic. No exaggeration. Not doing this for freebies. Although, if they need a sweaty, sweat-wicking under remodel, I would be completely interested. Please call me.
Yeah. So, in the meantime, if you miss us, you can follow us on Twitter, at Michael O. Burns, at Suri Patel 22, at Wisecrack Alec. That's me. You can leave us a review, say nice things, say some mean things, even if it's 5-star, or leave 5 stars, then say mean things. We care about the stars. I'm just kidding. Don't do that, please. But yeah, thank you so much.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye.